from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll chat with artist Jay Ivsevich about his upcoming show at Franklin College.
I'll find out about the spring part of the Indie Folk Series.
And I'll get a preview of Meet the Artists, the exhibit at the Central Library. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Franklin College will host its spring guest art exhibit, Surface to Air, and lecture, How I Got Into the Art World, featuring New York-based artist Jay Ivsevich. The exhibit will be open from February 11th through the 26th, and the opening lecture will be held on Thursday, February 11th at 7 p.m. in the Johnson Center for Fine Arts, Henderson Conference Room. Travis DiNicola spoke by phone with Jay Ivsevich from his Brooklyn studio.
You grew up in Indianapolis. I know you spent a long time in Brown County working, but where are you chatting with us right now from? You're in New York?
I am from the quiet corner of my messy studio in Brooklyn, New York, yeah.
Excellent. And getting ready to come back here for the show at Franklin.
Yes.
This sounds really interesting. We're going to talk about the Franklin show in just a minute, but a lot of the work that I'm more familiar that you've exhibited at shows in Chicago and I've seen in your sister's house, your work has had a real specific style and quality to it that really features these, you know, sort of solid colors with very hard lines, not quite cartoony or photographic, but very bright and vibrant type of work. And that's sort of what you've been known for in the past, right?
Yeah, it definitely it started as this kind of very illustrative, like you said, hard-edged. A lot of previous reviews have mentioned like Ed Ruscha and stuff, and that, mm-hmm. that type of very direct representational imagery. But the one thing that always was a constant was I felt like that imagery almost wasn't painterly enough, and I wanted to, because it was so graphic, add an element of the human touch. I didn't want it to look manufactured, and so I'd always I stumbled upon a technique of applying the paint with plastic dental syringes that I would cut off at different sizes, and so it was actually sucking the paint into the syringes and painting as you're squeezing out the paint, which gave it this kind of unique relief element, which added to it being just hard-edged work, so it was very textural and in a sense kind of frozen, animated in a way.
How did I had read that that you use syringes, and I guess I didn't quite believe that. I mean, how did you even come up with using that as a tool to apply the paint?
It was completely accidental. I had been, you know, painting in my house and kicking over paint cans and kind of I paint kind of like the Tasmanian devil. My studio's a mess, which is really interesting that the work comes out so clean and fresh, whereas the studio that it emerges from is always a wreck, very messy. And so I guess I had kicked over paint cans on something and really liked the way that the paint had spilled and wanted to look for a way to kind of manipulate that. And I had this leftover syringe from when I had my wisdom teeth pulled. I don't know why I saved it. but it seemed like a really easy way to do it, or the best method to do it, and I had this, and I tried it out, and it worked, so I've been using them ever since, and have enough friends of the family that are in orthodontia or dentists that keep me supplied and fresh syringes.
that's excellent. The images that you use, now, do you have photographs that you project, or how do you get the clean lines? I mean, I'm thinking of some specific ones, like there's one piece I've seen called Newsworthy, which is sort of a series of newspaper boxes in a row, all different, you know, very solid colors, but you know the outline of it is so specific and so distinct.
Yeah, I was never really much for drawing or sketching, and so I had always been accumulating images. I always have my camera with me, and this, you know, whenever I'm traveling. And so I end up having this collection of of images, and then I kind of know what for me will make a good painting. And in the past, I've kept the shows thematically consistent with that,
mm-hmm.
where the group of work would be like the show in Chicago was based on all kind of things you'd see around the sidewalk and taking the kind of noisy chaos and disruption of the city and making it colorful, quiet, contemplative, and kind of sublime. And so, yeah, I'm always collecting images. And ironically, when I was over in Southeast Asia and the temples in Cambodia and stuff, I found that when I came back, all of my pictures were of scaffoldings and construction works on the temples. So it was kind of, it was an interesting relation, even though I was on the other side of the world. And so that became fodder for another body of work, Destruct the Position of Urban American Iconography, with kind of Southeast Asian temples and prayer flags and such.
Well, do you, as part of the process, do you actually use the photographic image sort of as the basis then, or that's projected, or is it just more of an idea that then you work on manually transferring, if you will?
Yeah, well, it is projected, and that is how the hard edges came about.
Okay.
And so that's kind of...
Well, let me ask you about one specific piece that really stands out that I just think it is an incredible work, and that's called After the Blizzard.
And yeah.
It's a painting of essentially a bike that looks like it's chained up, I guess, on a bike rack after a big snow, and almost the entire canvas is white except for these sort of glimpses of color that suggest the image of the bike under the snow. Is that a fair description?
Yeah, and the one problem with that, unless you see it in person, there are actual white-on-white textural drifts and just slight variations in the white, which are really hard to capture in photographs or a digital image. But so there's a lot more going on if you see it in person.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's white-on-white, it's very difficult. But, yeah, that was just one of those amazing times where it snows 2 feet in one day in the city and they haven't plowed anything and the cars haven't gone to make the snow dirty, and it's super quiet. I think I took a walk at like 4 a.m. during a blizzard, and there weren't even footprints out, and was able to capture that image, which in itself was pretty amazing. And then
that's an image that then you transfer and add the paint. I mean, I'd love to see that one in person sometime. As you mentioned, I've actually only seen the reproductions online of that one.
I believe it's up in Chicago. Thomas Robertello in Chicago. He's on West Randolph.
The work that you're going to be showing in Franklin, at Franklin College, from what I've seen so far, you're still keeping those hard edge lines, but most of it, from what I've seen, appears to be black and white. Instead of these solid colors that sort of fill the image, it's monotone, and it's almost like this runny ink that has a life of its own that's sort of almost trying to fill or trying to escape the lines of the images.
Yeah, it was an interesting development this year. I just felt like things were slowing down in the art world. Galleries were closing. It was really practical to maybe do some experiments on paper. And I had always had that struggle with working with the hard edge work and having it be in this very defined imagery, which was it's deceptively simple. It was actually very time-consuming and laborious, very hard work. And I kind of wanted to do some work with more process-oriented and developed in and of itself. So I was experimenting with those, and it came out really nicely, but still maintaining the consistency with the body of work. So all the detail work is then done after the work dries, and it's kind of, the detail is informed by what happens in the process of painting these very saturated. They're actually, some are acrylic and some of this paint called Flash, which is a vinyl. You can water-base, so they're very, it's almost watercolor, but very saturated. And
yeah, okay, I was wondering how you did that, because it looked like it was sort of like a very runny watercolor type of thing, but my understanding is you usually work with acrylics.
Yeah, they're all acrylic, and I do that because I really appreciate really flat, matte colors, and when you see the work in person on the paper, it's really striking how flat they are, and it's the kind of the same subject matter, but very informed by the process of doing the work, which was very liberating and different from me. And so far, so good. I've been able to successfully transfer some to canvas.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, the show in Franklin will feature, I'm going to take about 25, but it might get edited down. And those will be the work presented. And then the actual space there at Franklin is a theater. So instead of hanging work in the theater, it's very dramatic and black curtains, so the color scheme will be very consistent and dark, and I'm going to create a kind of immersive three-dimensional environment that you'll walk into that will feature elements presented in the paintings, which I think is going to be an interesting experiment for me. And
so this is like an installation? I mean, using sculptural pieces as well?
Yeah, it's going to be a full-on installation. I'm building a reflecting pool in the gallery. I think it's going to be about 7 feet by 20, and the water will be dyed black, so you'll have this beautiful reflective surface. And then I've collected dead trees that will rise 15 or 16 feet out of the water and then draped. The only color should be, we'll see how it happens when I get there, but will be these faded prayer flags that I collected in Vietnam and had been weathering on the roof of my studio here in New York. And then there's an audio collage that I have composed from field recordings, both here in the city and on my travels. And so I'm hoping that it'll come off like this really nice, inviting environment that's kind of, in its own way, a secular, spiritual space informed by the paintings that you'll see in the atrium as you walk in. That's the plan.
Well, in addition to the show, which is titled Surface to Air, which will be up from the 11th of February through the 26th, you're also doing a lecture, right?
Yes.
How I Got Into the Art World?
Well, I didn't really want to title it that. In terms of our communications with the folks there in Franklin, they asked me what I'd be talking about, and I was going to tell them about the, about the installation, kind of how I came about to where I'm at, and when the invite came, that's what was on the flyer. So I didn't really choose to title it that, but it'll be a little bit about everything. And
well, how did it work out that Franklin invited you? I mean, obviously, as we said earlier, you're from Indianapolis. I know you spent a lot of time in Brown County, and you have relatives still here in Indiana. But how did it work out with Franklin?
Yeah, they had known about my work. One of the department heads there in the visual art department is a Serbian painter, and so she knew about my family, my family name being Croatian, and with contacts in the city there. And so she had known about my work, and then the other department head is a painter that showed at Rushman in Indianapolis, which is a gallery where I've shown a lot of my work. And so they both kind of knew about my work and had thinking that I'd be a good candidate for one of their visiting artists. And it seemed like an interesting opportunity for me to, do something close to home where folks that don't normally get to see my work can come and check it out, and to do something, at a school. A smaller school in a small town, and see what I come up with. There wouldn't be the pressure of doing something in a bigger city. So, this installation is very ambitious, and I think having a venue like that is a nice opportunity. So,
have you worked with installation before, or is this a first-time experiment for you?
I've always added certain elements. I've always had a tough time just hanging paints on the wall, so there might be little sculptural elements here and there, and I did some three-dimensional work in the Jacksonville Museum of Modern Art in 2002 or 3. So that's always been in the work. And when I went to visit the space in Franklin in September, I noticed that it was the theater and not necessarily a gallery space. So they would hang on temporary walls, and I wanted to do something different. So then the idea of doing the installation to complement the paintings came about. So,
are you still using the syringes with the new work, with the watercolor-like runny paint, or is that a whole new process that doesn't use the syringes?
No, it definitely does. All of the black outlines that you'll see in the work are all, when you see it in person, you'll realize they're all done in relief. So it's very, the abstraction that emerges from the saturated application of paint, very wet, that becomes dry, and then based on what happens with that and the flow of the paint, then I do the detail work with the syringes still. So there's maintaining that kind of aesthetic consistency and technique, because I feel like that's kind of my signature technique, but flexing it in different ways. And this has been a real new and refreshing different way to do it. But yes, it's still there, and it's kind of a little bit more informed by the process of the painting than it was previously. So it's a lot of fun for me to make the work as well.
Travis DiNicola with artist Jay Ivsevich. The exhibit Surface to Air opens at Franklin College on February 11th with a lecture by the artist at 7 p.m. in the Johnson Center for Fine Arts. If you'd like to see Jay's work, just Google Jay Ivsevich. And Ivsevich is spelled I-V-C-E-V-I-C-H. Again, I-V-C-E-V-I-C-H. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
After a brief winter holiday break, the Indie Folk Series powers its way back to the stage with a spring lineup that includes folky Tim Grimm and perennial Celtic roots rockers Hogeye Navvy. The series' irrepressible impresario Dan Henkel popped in to share a sneak preview and a lesson about guitar styles with Sharon Gamble.
I cannot believe how time flies that we're halfway through the Indie Folk Series season, and I know you had a smashing fall and an especially good open mic night. Tell me about that. I was not able to be there.
It was great fun, and that's always the Saturday after Thanksgiving when people come and play a short set, two or three songs, and the money all goes for a worthy cause. This time, in 09, and by the way, I'm still writing the year of the ox on my checks, but last year's open mic night was for Something to Crow About, mm-hmm. which is a program that brings art opportunities to very young children, 3 to 6 years old, in low-income schools. Wonderful cause. We raised almost $600 and had a great time doing it.
Fabulous. Now, does the open mic night, does it draw a lot of the same participants each year? Do you have a contingent of new people each year?
Yes, all of the above.
Because
we have, well, we have the repeat offenders, the people who play for us most every time they can, and that's great. And we have people like Greg O'Haver and Alan Gross are there just about every time. Love hearing from them. And then some others just come out of the woodwork. And some people are solo artists, or somebody may play one time solo and come back with a trio. It's just a nice mix. And we've had teenage performers who come in and look around and nervously get up and
Aww.
Charm us all. And we've had pros trying out new material. So it's a whole mixed bag.
You know, speaking of family affairs, this whole series is family friendly. And I know that you and your co-impresario, co-conspirator, however we want to say this, you have a good bead on who is family friendly. But do you ever have to talk to the artists and say, not that song, or do you keep it?
You know, we never have, Sharon. And I think people, they either know the series or they pick up on the vibe.
Yeah.
And it's a church. It's a Unitarian Universalist
right.
church, so it's a different kind of church for many people. But they realize it's a special space, and they see the people coming in and adjust. A lot of the artists say to us, you know, I really like playing here because I often have to play in a smoky bar, and people are making noise, and they're not really paying attention, and they're listening here.
Mm-hmm.
We did, for years, offer free childcare, and then we found that most people wanted to have their kids in with them, and the kids wanted to hear the music. So they'll come up and dance in the front, and they can make a little noise, and that's fine.
That's so encouraging. There aren't very many things parents can do with their kids or their grandkids or their nieces and nephews.
Well, if you're ingenious, there are always things. We're happy to offer one. And we have, you know, we have people come alone. We have people bring a table full of folks, and it's just a nice mixed bag.
Nice and casual. You know, your first 2010 artist is somebody who is pretty amazing because, not least because he's a singer, he's a songwriter, he's an actor, he's a triple threat, and he seems to move without much effort. He just changes gears among those different roles.
He does. Tim Grimm, and we've had Tim before. Of course, it was a highlight of the season a few years ago. He's so creative, and as you say, the medium just changes so easily for him, as it does for some really versatile artists in other styles and other media. It's, whether he's acting or singing or writing or producing. And Tim has his own music series in Columbus, the Americana music series, collaborates with many different artists and is happy flowing among those different worlds.
We'll have a little sample of Tim's work here in a few minutes, so stay tuned. If you don't know the work of Tim Grimm, you should. And Tim was one of the collaborators on this a fabulous series of Hoosier Dylan concerts that happened just a few weeks ago, and including, as we were talking about before we turned the microphones on, a 4.5-hour long tribute to Bob Dylan at the Athenaeum a few weeks ago. It's really stunning stuff, And Tim even has a next generation in his family that's musical as well.
He has. That's his son, who's just finishing high school, I think, and has what, by all accounts, is just a first-rate band. So he comes by it honestly, because Tim and Tim's wife Jan is also a singer and an actress.
Mm-hmm. And if we're sort of avoiding categorizing Tim and his music, because I think depending on who you are, you'd say folk or country.
Yeah, and what's the difference?
Yeah.
We could debate that. That's kind of an academic thing. And
yeah.
And it just, Tim's music really speaks of the roots and life in rural Indiana, which is what lured him back here from Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
So he sings about people who are of the land and on the land, and he sings of nature and personal struggles, individual insights and glimpses, I think. And that's our February 20th concert. Mm-hmm. So a great way, I think, to kick off the new year.
Absolutely. The Maple Trio, a subset, I guess you could say, of Blueprint Music, but they get together, the three of them, and do something a little bit different than what Blueprint does.
They do, and you talk about being hard to categorize. I don't know what to call Blueprint Music, and some people may say, is that folk music? Well, you know, they play guitars and stuff and they sing, but it's Blueprint Music is a new kind of band, and I would not know how to categorize it. And the Maple Trio are the instrumental heart of that. I have a very fun Christmas album of all instrumentals that they've done on guitars and mandolins and banjos and things. And they're coming not to do the Christmas music on March 20th, but to do a whole variety of things with some vocals thrown in. So you can expect the very accomplished acoustic musicianship that has supported Blueprint Music and that kind of creativity and mix in a trio. So I'm eager to hear them.
Now, do they write their own stuff? Do they interpret traditional music? How would you describe their rep?
Gosh, I don't know what they're going to play on March 20th, and they probably don't know yet either. But
too
they,
soon.
Yeah, they do write originals. They do take some traditional material and buff it up with their own unique take. So
mm-hmm.
let's see what moves them on March 20th.
Mm-hmm. Kara Barnard, if you follow mandolin at all, you know this name, and she's coming to us in April. I have to ask for people who are non-guitarists, non-string-strummed instrument players. She added mandolin to her existing finesse on guitar, and she is a fingerstyle guitarist, which, as a guitarist yourself, I'm going to ask you to describe. What does that mean?
Well, Kara Barnard is multi-talented, and she was a gift from God, because we had scheduled a major national artist who suddenly said, hey, we can't make it, the
Uh-oh.
Schedule's not working out. Said, oh man, what do we do? And Carl Zemlin, the ace sound guy from Sonic Artistry, said, got two words for you, Kara Barnard. Called Kara, who has a music shop in Nashville, Indiana, teaches, and I didn't know her, and I didn't know her music until, this goes back a couple of years,
mm-hmm.
probably 3 years ago, and she has done a lot of recording as a session artist, solo artist. She writes, she teaches multiple instruments, banjo, mandolin, guitar, I don't remember what all. And Kara came with very little notice and gave us one heck of a show. She's a dynamic performer and so versatile and so very good. Couldn't believe it. And she brought along with her as a bonus her friend John Kay, who is an exemplary and award-winning dulcimer player, true virtuoso of the Appalachian, what usually is a lap dulcimer that he plays with a strap around his neck. So they just wowed us, and I said, gosh, we've got to have Kara back. So keeping with our theme for the second half of this season, which is bringing back repeat offenders to play for us, people want to hear again, there's Kara Barnard. And, man, you may not know the name, but if you like people with chops and taste and versatility and a sparkling stage presence, you ought to come in April.
It's encouraging that this was somebody, that there are some artists that you don't know yet that are in our backyard, that you're still discovering new folks.
There are so many creative people, Sharon, and you and I keep running into them. Someone says, hey, have you heard this? Have you heard
mm-hmm.
them? And maybe I don't get out much, but I'm always discovering new creative people. And in this era when people can play and record an album at home, they can have the technology to do it themselves, and when people love to collaborate across borders and genres, I think we all benefit from that.
I'm going to go back to a technical question. What's fingerstyle? What is fingerstyle playing? What does that mean?
Well, it's plucking the strings of the guitar individually
instead of strumming.
All once, or instead of playing with a flat pick. So that with fingerstyle, you can play polyphonic music. You can play classical, for instance, which may have a bass line and an inner supporting harmony and then a different texture of the melody on top. You can play composed classical music that way, in which case it's called classical style guitar, or just finger style, which you'd recognize it if you heard it. And instead of a boom-chicka-boom-chicka or the single note lead style playing or the Carter family, Carter style playing, you'll hear several things going on at once. So finger style tends to be a solo discipline. You can combine it with other instruments.
I should have had you bring a guitar in for this. We'll have you back and you can do a demonstration.
I can show you everything I know and it won't take long. No, but it would be fun to talk about styles, you
know,
because you say, what's finger style, what's folk, and what's acoustic and flat picking?
Because there are a lot of people who, you know, like to listen, but maybe don't know the ins and outs if they've never played.
Well, like so many things, if you know a little bit of the vocabulary or the grammar of the art, whatever it is,
you can get in a lot of trouble.
Easily. And it can help you understand a bit what you're hearing.
That's right. Well, you need absolutely no academic knowledge to enjoy any of these artists, but especially Hoggai Navi, who, if you just say the name, people start dancing.
Oh, my gosh.
They are irrepressible.
Well, yeah, the biggest concert I think we've had, we've sold out at probably 120 people, and don't tell the fire marshal, because we were blocking the exit. And Hoggai Navi, of course, for years played weekly at the Aristocrat on College Avenue. And they do just a whole mix of Celtic and seafaring songs, and some will put tears in your eyes, and a lot of them will have you just hooting and howling and stomping your feet. And we've never had so much fun, so delighted to have Hoggai Navi back. Oh, and they, in fact, released an album recorded live at the Indie Folk Series last time they played. A couple of groups have done that, and that's always fun. So
cool.
Hoggai Navi's a great way to close out the season. May 15th.
Yeah.
Sharon Gamble with the Indie Folk Series, Dan Henkel. Find out more at IndieFolkSeries.org. Again, IndieFolkSeries.org. Meanwhile, here's a cut from Tim Grimm to inspire you.
They've been walking through shopping malls, bored with all the shops. So they wandered around the parking lot to see what had been parked. There were cars of every color, cars of every size. They didn't care what car it was as long as it could drive. And there was $200 in the glove box. Full tank of gas by the gauge. A complete set of keys dangling within reach. A recipe for the perfect getaway. Why don't we go to California? So they headed down the road to Tennessee. Three Hoosier juveniles and Lincolns, each of whom failed geography. There was Chili at the wheel, Joe Hopper by his side, but between the both of them sat Darla Sue McBride. Chili was the oldest, 9 months and 14 days, until his 15th birthday on the day of his getaway. When they pulled into Nashville, they thought they were doing fine. They just followed the golden arches right down Highway 65. Just a little pit stop, stayed at the Budget Inn. As soon as they smelled daybreak, they hit the road again. Why don't we go to California? In 2 days' time, they crossed the Jersey line. Three Hoosier juvenile delinquents, nothing too substantial on their minds. Well, Joe Hoffman didn't say much. He thought he was gonna die. He discovered motion sickness somewhere back on 65. So his head was out the window, maybe half the day. Chili's heart did not go out, Joe Hawking his way. And Chili was getting antsy, Darla was getting tired. With her hand upon the radio, she kept the volume high. Now there are parts of Newark you really shouldn't go. After dark with Hoosier plays blaring country radio. Another life experience slapped them in the face on an unlit street of unexpected faces filled with hate. But this night they were lucky,
Chili's pedal hit the floor. Joe Hawker rolled the window down, got sick again once more. He said, I have had enough of this. I am going home. So Darla said, Chili, let's find a telephone. Why don't we go to California? There's a crack of dawn that met for my son. Two Hoosier juveniles in Lincoln trying to figure out if it was fun. Laid out in the back seat, she didn't see the highway curve when Chili fell asleep. And they woke with bright lights flashing, Chili by her side, in the back of a state trooper car being told of their rights. And back home in Indiana, this story it was told by Joe Hawk to his classmates of adventures on the road. Chili's teacher said to him, we're glad you're back in town, and that's really quite a story. You should try and write it down. Chili said, you think so? She nodded, then he paused. Gosh, maybe my life better than I ever thought it was. There were $200 in the glove box, full tank of gas by the gate, a complete set of keys dangling within reach, a recipe for the perfect getaway. Why don't we go to California? Why don't we go to California? Why don't we go to California?
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
I need some cuisine ideas.
Cuisine?
Yes.
Not a lean cuisine.
No, no. I am thinking about having a party for Groundhog Day, which is coming up in a few days.
Well, you know, if you
But I don't know what to serve.
Well, if you get some pork and ground it up, you could have groundhog.
Oh!
Oh, no. You don't want to do that.
Pork barbecue. You
Oh, goodness.
I'm eager to find out if we have any arts events that would be appropriate for Groundhog Day on our calendar.
If there are,
what will we do for Groundhog Day? Mm-hmm.
Maybe you should just focus on some good Pennsylvania Dutch foods, you know, with some cheeses and pretzels and mustards and things like that.
Oh,
yeah.
That's very smart. Yeah. And maybe Punxsutawney Phil will drop in at my house.
There you go.
And tell
over
me
and over and over
again. Over or not.
Well, a great way to celebrate winter being over, assuming that it will be over soon, is Carnival 2010 at the Jazz Kitchen. They are again having their premier Brazilian Carnival party at the Jazz Kitchen on February 13th, which is very cool, sort of an early Valentine's sort of celebration. And for this night, they're going to have live samba dancers, a Brazilian samba band, and the IU Brazilian Ensemble, a special menu with Brazilian food and beer and drinks and all types of things like that, and big displays and TVs displaying the Carnival parade in Rio de Janeiro. So
that is so cool.
Very fun, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's up at the Jazz Kitchen on the 13th.
Is it okay to dress as a samba dancer?
I think you should.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Speaking of stylish, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, a very stylish movie from back in the day starring our own Hoosier Carol Lombard, mm-hmm. will be screened at Central Library at 2 o'clock on Valentine's Day, February 14th. It's
Aww.
Free, so if you're looking for something to do with your sweetie and your budget's a little tight, you might consider that. And you should be prepared because the fabulous film historian David Smith is going to be there giving a little talk beforehand. Again, that's Mr. and Mrs. Smith, classic movie at Clues Auditorium. That's the round part of the new Central Library downtown, 2 o'clock on Valentine's Day.
Very cool. And Art and Soul is kicking off very soon at the Indianapolis Arts Garden. That's the celebration of the arts through Black History Month. And, in fact, there are going to be 18 free different performances throughout the month of February at the Arts Garden. If you go to indiearts.org and then the Art Soul page for Art and Soul, then you can get the full schedule of seeing what is going to be going on down there. A lot of great performances, a lot of great other events at many arts organizations as well throughout the month.
Very good. Okay, this is a real stretch. You ready? Have you been doing your warm-up exercise?
I've been warming up
so you can stretch with me for this next
okay.
time? Here's a Groundhog Day event. Ice Miller Indie Wine Fest. Because you can drink light wines and dark wines.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah,
like see the shadow
light,
or you don't see
wines,
the shadow.
Uh-huh. Some mm-hmm. deep, rich red mm-hmm. wines. Yeah, okay, yeah. Okay.
Thinking of some like never, a okay. hole in the ground or whatever.
Don't go there. It is coming up on Friday, February 5th.
And we're going
to
be there.
We're going to be there broadcasting live, talking to some of the vintners and some other experts who will help you get the most out of tasting and buying and enjoying wine. And we might even talk to you if you're there. Come on up and introduce yourselves and tell us what you like about wine. Wow.
There you go.
That's a big question.
I am looking forward to that.
Me too. Friday, February 5th, 6 to 9, you can get regular tickets or connoisseur tickets for the greatest breadth of tasting experience and education experience. Where is it? Indiana Roof Ballroom. That is in the same building as the IRT, but upstairs, and that's Ice Miller Indie Wine Fest in partnership with WFYI on Friday the 5th.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, up in Carmel at the Carmel Community Players, they are going to be presenting one of my absolute favorite plays. Do you know what it is, Sharon? It won the Pulitzer Prize in 1955. Tennessee Williams.
Cat on a Hot Tin Roof.
You got it.
Woohoo!
There you go. Yeah, absolutely. No, that's Streetcar Named Desire.
Oh, that's right. I leapt because I know someone who has cats named Stella and Stanley.
Okay, well, the Cat on a Hot Tin Roof, Tennessee Williams' fantastic play, is being presented by the Carmel Community Players, opening February 11th, running through the 21st. If you've never seen the play, well, you should. Looking forward to seeing their production. You can get more information at carmelplayhouse.com.
Excellent. Hey, if you and your sweetie like jazz, here's something you can do. It's not on Valentine's Day. It's a couple days later, but you can still, give her a coupon, give her the tickets or him ahead of time. This is a concert in conjunction with the International Violin Competition. You may say, wait just a minute, Sharon, why are they doing jazz?
Wait just a minute, Sharon, why are they doing jazz?
Because they've created this series of crossover concerts because, fiddle is not just for Mozart and Beethoven anymore. And if you are a jazz fan, you might know the man who is sometimes called the Jimi Hendrix of the violin. He's a Russian man named Joe Denizan, and I hope I have the accent on the right syllable there. His jazz trio with drummer Luciana Padmore will be in concert at the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center in the Lilly Hall on Tuesday, February 16th at 7:30. Contact the violin competition to get your tickets for that.
Friday night, next Friday night is the first Friday in February, so there's a lot of gallery openings.
Absolutely.
Going around town. Pretty much every gallery and studio has a cool show going on. Two I want to mention very quickly at the Harrison Show, A Beautiful Mind, new work by Elizabeth Goupe Hall, and this features her work, which is really interesting. She uses what's called encaustic collage, which uses the technique of applying molten beeswax and pigment over a surface and then sort of fusing the layers together so you get this real deep textural type of work. And then another show up at the Keller Mahoney Gallery in Zionsville featuring the photography of Andy Chen, a great title, Snow Day. It's a whole collection of photographic prints from the first snow out in Wyoming. Some really beautiful work up there in Zionsville. But there's lots of great work at all the galleries around town.
I think that's a Groundhog Day worthy event you've just listed.
There you go.
Also on First Friday from 6 to 9 at the Morris Butler House, you can see Hoosier Salon artists Morris Kurtz, Jeffrey Bottom, Donna Short, and Judith Weiss. That's at 1204 North Park Avenue. A little hard to find the first time you get there, but well worth going there and take advantage of the setting and look around Morris Butler House a little bit while you're there.
Very good. Well, Sharon, we will be back next week and find out what the groundhog has done and have more ideas for what you can do on
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The entire community is invited to meet the African-American artists whose works will be on display through February at Central Library and enjoy an evening of cultural entertainment. Music, poetry, magic, a fashion show, and art will be showcased at the opening on Saturday, February 6th from 6 to 10 p.m. at Central Library. The 22nd annual Meet the Artists event is presented by IMCPL's African American History Committee, and Travis DiNicola had the chance to speak with artist Tony Radford and Dee Del Riverda Jennings about the show.
It's a pretty big show, a pretty big event, again in the 22nd year, and it's great now that it takes place at, well, it's always been through the library system,
right,
for IMCPL.
But the library's African American History Committee, which is a committee that puts programs together throughout the year.
And it's great to have it at Central Library. That's such a good space for it.
Oh, yes. Great to be back home. This is our third year. Bigger, better venue. And the night of the opening, we opened the whole library, all six floors, with the exhibit, entertainment, the whole nine.
Big party.
Big party, big celebration.
And it's not just visual art as well. You've got authors, you've got performers, you've got dancers, and you even have, for the opening night, you've got a magic show this year, right?
This year, yes. I'm bringing an magician and illusionist, mm-hmm, from Chicago. A friend of mine told me about him, so I followed up on it, checked out his website, and I liked what I saw, and we've been conversing for like the last 6 months now, and he's really thrilled about coming. Walter King calls himself the Spellbinder. I actually got to check his show out. He was here in November, did, mm-hmm, a private showing for Christmas Addicts, and he invited me to come over. I'm going to tell everybody they're in for an amazing show. Not only are you going to get the magic and the illusions, he gives you an in-depth history of African-American magicians from the 1800s up.
Oh, how cool. That sounds like a great show, and that's just one of the many events actually that night, and it's all free. Dee, tell me about your involvement in this. You're an artist, and how are you working within Meet the Artists?
Yes, I'm involved this year. I'm an interdisciplinary artist, a regional arts editor, journalist, visual artist, sculptor, mixed media. I run the gamut from steel to stone, paint to paper. But this year, what I'm doing is Tony asked me to bring my recent new accomplishment, hand-wrought jewelry, precious metal and semi-precious metal mixed media statement jewelry.
Okay.
And I call that line Seventh Goddess Jewelry Design, which is created exclusively by me.
Very cool. Now, is this work you've been showing anywhere else yet?
Yes. I've been showing it for 2 years now at the Eagle Jorg.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so you'll be part of the opening. And then yes. Also, now, will your work be on exhibit throughout the whole month of February as
yes,
part of the
will.
Whole show?
Yes, it will. On the in a showcase.
Mm-hmm.
On the third floor.
Okay.
And it'll be there in all its glory, and everyone's welcome to check it out. And they're distinct pieces. They're not the small, delicate pieces. These are large, statement goddess pieces. Because I feel like all women are goddesses.
I'm going to ask you that. Describe for me, if you will, a statement goddess piece. Did you say earlier it used metal? Is that that's part
yes,
of it?
Yes, some of them are copper, mm-hmm. Brass, and also I have pewter, silver.
Okay.
Mm-hmm, and they're large pieces. I mean, they're not little, thin, small, dainty mm-hmm. Items. These are large, bold, brazen goddess-like.
I'm thinking Wonder Woman here or something. I don't know.
Oh, well, they could be that.
Okay.
But they're unique. They're very distinct and different. And that's the thing now in the fashion world mm-hmm. is statement jewelry. Everyone has something odd and distinct now, the women.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And unique. And
yes.
Very, very cool. Now, have you participated in Meet the Artist before?
I yes, for years mm-hmm. and
I
years.
I thought so, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's always such a great experience. And
yes,
a great,
it is.
And a great show. And, of course, the big gala is always, just the most exciting part of it. Tony, if you would, run me through some of the other things that are going on that night, because there is so much. I know it's from 6 until 10, and mm-hmm. Takes place on the opening night's on Saturday, February 6th.
From 6 to 10. Kicking things off, we'll have Urban Vibes, who will take the stage at 5:45. They're an African drum troupe, really good. They do poetry, drumming, storytelling, the whole nine yards. We're bringing a poet in from Atlanta.
Okay.
She's originally from here, a friend of mine, and went to Atlanta this summer, and I never knew she did poetry, and she had all her poetry writings framed with shaded pictures in the background, and she mm-hmm. started spitting her poetry, and I was like, wow, I'm looking for a poet for my show. So I invited her to come down, and
cool.
We're going to bring her here at 7 o'clock. At 7 o'clock, you don't want to miss the Spellbinder.
Absolutely. The magic show. That'll be cool.
Walter King. And that'll be in our Clues Auditorium. Everything else will take presence on our stage. 7:45, we'll introduce the wonderful creative artist to you. At 7:45, also, my brother Greg Radford will unveil his miniature Midway. And everybody's been asking about that.
Yeah, what is that?
Well, he loves fairs and carnivals mm-hmm. and rides, and he's always worked at fairs. He's just gotten a fascination for rides. When we were younger, he would take motors out of my mother's old appliances and make rides. I mean, real rides, Ferris wheels that worked with motors.
Uh-huh.
And he just did that, and he's picked it up. He's recently retired, so he just picked it up, and he's got this whole Midway. Half of them are found objects that he made, and some of them are connect pieces that he's bought and put found objects on, so it's really amazing.
Oh, that's cool.
And,
well,
and
you do a lot of work with found objects.
I do a lot of work with
found objects. I'm seeing how this all ties together
right.
here. Man,
so,
your mom must have had a pretty clean house with you guys just, like, picking everything up.
Right. He called me over one day and back this summer and asked me to come over, and I went and he opened the door, and it was mm-hmm. like it blew me away, and it's been blowing everybody away, kids, adults,
yeah.
everybody.
And is this like full size or are these like models?
They're like models, but
okay.
they actually move. They
yeah.
light up the everything. He's got love people. It's like a miniature Midway with
got
people.
It. Okay.
So it's really interesting. So really something for everybody, for the
yeah.
kids and grown-ups. At 8 o'clock, we have a wonderful band, New Soul Theory, that'll take stage, jazz, blues, R&B. They've got a wonderful singer. They did a set for me this summer at Art in the Garden,
mm-hmm.
so I had to get them for Meet the Artist.
Yeah,
and at
great.
9 o'clock, we'll celebrate our 16th annual fashion show, headed up by Raymond Gray, who actually did it last year for us, and by popular demand, everybody wanted him back. It's one of the best fashion shows that we've had.
Cool.
We have, like, say, 8 talented artists, Bruce Armstrong, Glenn Walker, Michael Shane from Detroit. We're bringing in artists from Detroit, scratchboard artists. We had a young man that was supposed to be in the show with us, 27 years old, Brandon Terrell Knox, who passed away, so we're going to have some of his work on display. Loban Hamilton. Each year we have an artist that I kind of out of the box that does something totally different. This guy does portraits of music entertainers with vinyl, broken up records.
Really? Oh, that
very,
sounds so cool.
Very interesting.
I'd like to see that, yeah.
Yes, it's interesting. Patricia Gaines Mills, who is an oil painter, who did the cover for our program. Ivory Wilson Teagues, who's going to be a sculptor. She'll have six pieces on each side of the escalators going from three to the fifth floor. And, of course, Dee Deriverta Jennings will have her wonderful goddess jewelry. We have two youth artists, Kier Lynn Smith from St. Louis. She's a college student. She'll be there with us one day selling her products, helping earn her way through school. And the first year ever, we'll have our youngest artist ever, two-year-old Dior Allen, which happens to be my granddaughter, but she loves to draw. And I saw that, and so I went and bought her pad, pencils,
that's so cool,
markers. So she's got a little collection. We have three wonderful authors that will be there doing book signings, Tawana L. Commons, Caroline Hunter, and Carmen Glenn. And they will be there the opening night with their books, autographing the books. And that's it. We just want everybody to come out, something for everybody, the whole family.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, totally appropriate for just all family members.
All ages. I know the oldest person we had in the audience was 96 years old. And from infant, people, you know, bring the babies, the kids. It's family oriented. It's for everybody. It's for a community event. So we just want everybody to come out and celebrate with us Saturday, February the 6th.
Sounds like it's going to be a great night.
It's going to be a great night.
Looking forward to it. And if for some reason, if you miss the opening night, swing by Central Library anytime from now through the end of February and check out all the cool work that's on display. Right. Tony D, thanks so much for being on Art of the Matter. It was great talking with you both.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with artist Tony Radford and Dee Deriverta Jennings. The annual Meet the Artist event opens at Central Library on Saturday, February 6th from 6 to 10 p.m. For more information, visit imcpl.org. Again, imcpl.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I get to take a shot at the Pistols exhibit at the Idle George.
I'll chat with a group of women artists about a retreat they took together in Puerto Vallarta.
And I'll find out about the Lincoln exhibits at the Indiana State Museum. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more. So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter is made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and by grants from the Arts Council of Indianapolis and from the City of Indianapolis, and by support from the Central Indiana Community Foundation, the Indiana Arts Commission, a state agency, and by the National Endowment for the Arts, a federal agency. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.